Hi everyone, it's Joe here from Lawn Solutions Australia and welcome to this episode of Turf Talk where I'm joined by Dr. Christian Spring, who is a, what's your title again?
So I'm the Principal Scientist.
Principal Scientist.
That's it.
Yep. At Sports Turf Research Institute.
Absolutely. So that's where we've come from. Nowadays, of course, NASI branding, just STRI.
Yeah, keep it that way.
So that's where I come from and that's what I do, roughly.
And where's your office located? Where do you work out of? Where do
so
you come from?
STRI's Global HQ is in the beautiful county of Yorkshire in England. It's in the north of England. It's just north of Bradford and Leeds. So any of your listeners that really love rugby league, they'll know that that's right in the heartland of English rugby league on the M62 corridor. So it's a very traditional part of the UK and we're located somewhere which is more or less average rainfall, average temperature, average sunlight across the whole UK. So accidentally, it was a great place to start an institute looking at grass research.
But not average research.
But not average research, above average research, top notch, best of the best research.
So for those who have absolutely no idea what the Sports Turf Research Institute is or does, why don't you give us a little bit of an overview?
Sure. And so we started off very much focused on golf. However, that very quickly changed because once you figure out best grasses for golf, how to grow a fairway, a tee, it's a pretty short leap before you start jumping into soccer pitches, footy pitches, horse race tracks.
Yep.
And so we've always been about the science and the research. And that is the DNA that we come from. So we focus on the science and the research behind all aspects of sports surface design, construction, operation, and innovation. And that really sums up what we do. We get involved in the planning even before a project's even designed, make sure that it's going to meet the requirements. We then design it so that it's the most sustainable, has the best options, obviously meets the cost and the budget available.
Yes.
And it's going to be fit for purpose, that we have the right solutions, the right products in there, that we've got the right grasses. And we're also catered for managing it. And then all of that is tied together with this glue that is knowledge, research, science.
So you do it all?
Do it all. We do it all. And we do it all globally as well. So whilst our HQ is very much based in England, we have facilities and do work across all over the world. So we've got facilities here in Australia with a team in Australia. We operate in Middle East, in the Far East. We do work in across Europe and into North America as well. So where there's a project, where someone has a sports surface, we'll hop on a plane and happy go work with them.
So a couple of key projects that you've been involved with. So there's a couple of big ones that we've spoke about that you do on an ongoing basis. So we'll talk about them a little bit later on. But across the last sort of few years, what are some of the key things that STRI has been directly involved with?
I mean, I think for us, one of the key things that we get involved with is researching into solutions and projects and products that we can use across all aspects of the turf industry, making sure that what we get in the bottle actually does what it says on the tin and is actually the best possible option for us. But some really nice, big, high-profile clients, things like the All England Club at Wimbledon, working at World Cups, working with the golf industry as well. But one of the beautiful things about working for STRI is we operate at every single level. So one day you could be at an international world-class tournament, and I love going to these tournaments and working on the turf, working with the grounds teams, the superintendent teams to produce these surfaces, seeing those world-class events from the inside out.
Yeah.
But the next day, you could be going to your local authority, local council pitch and giving them some really straightforward advice that has a massive impact on how they produce a better playing surface for all the people that go out and play sort of on the Sunday or during the week.
Cool. So you're not just top level. You're not just FIFA and Wimbledon.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It very much is every level through. And as a scientist and as an agronomist, actually sometimes the work at that community level, that local authority level, can be just as, if not sometimes, more rewarding because you can help and enlighten someone on a problem or an issue that they've had.
Yeah.
And they take that understanding and they can make their pitch, their golf course, whatever it is they're managing, even better. And a small change can have a massive, massive impact.
Yeah, sure.
And that's really rewarding when you go back and see them in a year's time or 6 months' time. And they're like, man, I'm that drainage, you've advised us to put that in. You've given us some advice on how sort of best to manage our grass. And we've got the best pitches ever. And all my players are really happy. Well, I'm stoked that they can have that experience.
Yeah, how rewarding is that?
Oh, no, that's amazing. That's why I do the job. Yeah. It's for that kind of experience and the passing and the sharing of knowledge and transferring that across. Because knowledge in somebody's brain is knowledge that someone else isn't able to use.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, cool. And surely the community feels that. It's great. Awesome stories and something that I'm sure that, you know, you're helping small clubs on small budgets, fixed fields, which is great. People playing on better surfaces is unreal. But I am intrigued with Wimbledon because I know lawn tennis is such a finicky thing and it's something you have to get right. So, and particularly with something with, you know, one of the biggest sporting events in the world. So what do you actually do when you're at Wimbledon each year? Like, what things are you testing? What are you looking for? What are you helping them with?
Sure. And I think Wimbledon for me is that crossover between the fine detail, the smoothness of the surface that you get from producing putting surfaces, for example, whilst it's still going to be able to take a whole heap of players running up and down and causing a whole lot of damage on it. So what we do with Wimbledon or the All England Lawn Tennis Club is twofold. The first thing we do is we're heavily involved with their team there, supporting their team at Wimbledon during the championships and the run-up to the championships, looking at how they're managing the courts, to help assess the botanical composition, for example. The courts there all tend to be made from perennial ryegrass, cool season grasses.
Yes.
And one of the things we're looking to redo is control ingress of potential weed grasses, the ubiquitous Poa annua, annual bluegrass, annual meadowgrass, depending on where you're from. And so we can help them to understand how much there is, what we might want to do differently strategically to keep its population low.
Yep.
We're measuring the courts every day during the championship.
So this goes on throughout the tournament.
Oh, throughout the tournament, absolutely. So in the run-up to, helping the team to understand where they're at, what part in their cycle for the performance of their playing surfaces, because these are clay loam-based soils.
Yeah.
They've got the grass growing in them, and we want to get that authentic tennis surface. So it's got to look $1 million, but it also has to play like the best surfaces in the world. And that's difficult to do on biology.
Yes.
And so we spend and we spend a long time supporting those guys, and they have a real eye for detail to make sure that when those tennis players come out, it is the best, most manicured surface. And we're looking at things like how the ball interacts with the surface. Does it bounce adequately? Does the ball travel, i.e. when the ball is hit and struck into the surface, does it travel on to where the player is a comfortable height for the player to play it?
Yeah.
We need these to be quick and challenging surfaces, but we don't want them unplayable. We don't want unpredictable bounce, for example, where the ball just dies and doesn't carry to the player.
Yeah.
So we're measuring how hard the courts are. We're measuring the grass cover in the courts. During the championship, every day we're assessing courts and how firm they are. That influences irrigation practices. And how often is a case in a typical summer season, we're kind of keeping the reins pulled in a little bit on the court so they don't run away with us.
Yeah.
Obviously, when it's a bit wet weather, we're kind of sort of pushing them on a little bit because we want them to firm up as quickly as we can do to make sure we get that authentic playing surface. So all of these readings we're collecting daily before play, so the guys can use any of that information they want to help inform their decision-making process.
Do you get feedback from the players?
Sometimes we will do, yeah. Sometimes, because and it's not just the show courts we go and do. It's not just the match courts. We'll also be testing a good number of the practice courts as well. So these are the courts that the players will warm up on. And they're pretty quick at telling you if they're not playing similarly to the match courts.
Yeah.
So there can be a good interaction with what we do. And
you wouldn't want Nick Kyrgios unhappy with you too much.
Yeah.
You hear about that?
No, I've not heard about that. Go on, tell me about that.
No. You'd have a tweet about SGRI.
Look, everyone's the joy about turf, and you'll have seen this before. Everyone's an expert. As soon as it comes to grass, everyone's an expert.
Yeah.
So sometimes it just is better to let the experts be the experts.
Yes.
But look, we're always happy to engage with any player, and we've done it throughout with football players, tennis players, golf players. And often they see some strange-looking fellows walking around doing weird things to bits of turf that they just don't understand. And they'll often come up and say, what is it you're doing? Oh, this is a Clegg impact hammer. It measures how hard the courts are. And this is what we do. This measures ball bounce. You can start to really kind of engage with them. And I think we've seen that in certain sports. if the players understand the level of detail that goes into producing the surface, they then also understand no one's going out their way to produce a bad surface.
Yeah.
Everything we do is to produce the best of the best.
Yeah.
And the level of detail we go into to make sure that when they set foot on that court, on that putting surface, on that pitch, it's the best it can possibly be.
Because the innovation and the work that STRI and others have done on Wimbledon has actually changed the way people play tennis there, hasn't there? Like,
absolutely, it has. Absolutely. And when we first started to work with the All England Club, there was a lot of mixture of grasses in some of those courts. And one of the things we were seeing, and all you've got to do is look back on some of the old footage, is that the ball wouldn't necessarily carry predictably to the player. So the player obviously serves from the baseline, the ball bounces, and sometimes it doesn't carry very well. So often you'll find players play a ball and then they'll come into the net and serve volley.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things we've identified with that was we want to make sure we've got the best potential or possible botanical composition with the right species, the right cultivars. And that's then allowed, along with obviously how the tennis players are playing, how they've evolved physically. Mm-hmm. But what it does is it allows them to play a lot more from the baseline. And also, you do see the baselines now take a lot more of a pounding.
They've changed. It's changed from a meter inside the baseline being the most worn bit to a meter behind the baseline.
Absolutely. And so that's changed, and the grass and the court composition has been a part of that change. So it's nice to sort of look and think, well, actually, we've hopefully made things more consistent, which we know we have. We've made them harder wearing as best as we can do. Mm-hmm. And at the same point, we've allowed players to express themselves in a way which is authentic to the game that they play.
People don't know that all this comes back to grass and the people that worked on the course.
It really does. And I think I put my hand up. Yeah. I'm a turf nerd.
Yeah.
Whatever I did, I'd be a geek, I'd be a nerd. And for me, getting really passionate and trying to understand the infinite detail that there may be about a grass plant and how it works is really important. And I think that passion and that kind of information, that kind of knowledge, we need to spread and we share with the people maintaining these sports facilities. And hopefully, that, and I know a lot of these guys also share that level of geekery.
Yeah.
And that just means that we're all focused on that quality of that product that we all produce for the top flight sporting events.
So last question on Wimbledon. It's not the only thing you do. We won't want to talk about it the whole time. And because we're all grass geeks and a lot of our listeners are grass geeks or turf nerds, it's straight ryegrass and they reseed every year or they bring sod in, or what do they do for a place like Wimbledon?
So, yes, it's going to be straight ryegrass. It'll be a number of varieties. And as part of what we do with Wimbledon, we're actually doing the All England Club runs their own grass cultivar variety testing program. So they will be talking to plant seed producers and they will get what they're already using and they will test it against the best that's out there, the varieties that the producers say, we think this is going to work really well.
Yeah.
And what we do is we apply a scientific process and we actually test, is it the best? Mm-hmm. Is what we are using the best that's the best, or could there be other things that we want to add in there? And those that perennial ryegrass mix is really important. And it's that which really gives that high quality, high hard wearing finish that we're looking for.
Mm. So they don't harvest sod and bring it in then when they find this grass?
No, typically what they'll do is they would strip their courts periodically, and that is really for making sure that we're controlling seed bank of weed grasses like my friend Poa Annua.
Yes.
Also for making sure that we're kind of keeping the sward clean, and then we'd reseed. They don't tend to resod because we want these tennis courts we built from very specific soil types. So typically they will be on a cycle of renovation, which will be about removing organic matter. It will be keeping the sward clean, removing seed bank, bringing in some fresh clay loam soil, overseeding that, and then off they go. Sometimes they'll also just do a heavy scarification. So it's not taking the top off every time.
Yeah.
And it's really assessing which courts need doing and which courts don't. Where are they within their life cycle? And the guys will also do sterilization with steam cleaning to help with control of wheatgrass ingress as well. So they're very forethinking, but they spend a lot of time preparing those courts, even out of season, to make sure that ready for when the members want to play and when the championships come around, they're in the best possible condition.
Right. So obviously there's a heck of a lot of work that goes into it, not just from the research side, but also from the getting the courts into playability. How does that compare to an event like the Qatar FIFA World Cup? Because that's a totally different environment to grow grass in, and indoor stadiums, air-conditioned stadiums, yeah, and that sort of thing. So
absolutely.
So you guys were behind the grass selection for that?
So when FIFA announced that they were going to hold a World Cup, at that point it was a summer World Cup, yeah, in Qatar.
Yeah.
That raised a few eyebrows. Of course it did. All you have to do is look through the world media and see that. But what SGRI did is we got engaged along with a local company to form a joint venture company that allowed us to do research for the organising committee. So and that was sort of 2014, because we understood that no matter what happened, whether it was a summer World Cup or, as it turned out, to be a winter World Cup, is that we needed to make sure that we had the right grasses growing in the right conditions. The stadiums were going to be shady, warm season grasses, shady environments in the summer. What do we need to do to support them? And then, okay, now we've got an autumn-winter World Cup. What do we do with a warm season grass-based sward?
Yep.
Do we transition? Do we not transition? How do we get that so that we can perform? And at the same point, so we've got all this work we need to do on how to build, what we build them from. Ironically, finding the right sand in the desert is a real headache. It really is, because we take for granted that we have sand quarries producing consistent materials out of old prehistoric beach deposits, which is what most of our sand is, dinosaur sand. But when you go to the desert, it's all been blown there in these big dunes, it's been sorted by the wind, and it can be very variable in what you get. So finding the right sand was important. Making sure we have the right components in that pitch is vital. Knowing what grasses we want, and then how do we manage them? So it's just taking them into the shade. What kind of supportive technologies do we need to put in? And then you add the complexity of, by the way, guys, we've got 32 games.
Yeah.
But we've already got 8 stadia. Normally, there is at least 10, if not 12 stadia that can be used. Right, now we've got 8. Oh, and by the way, we've also got a shorter time period, so there's less recovery time between games. So really, it was the first World Cup, really, we've had the opportunity to have to do sort of 6 years' worth of research to get us to the point to make sure that when that World Cup comes around, these stadia are being built, everything is being prepared, that we have the confidence and the science behind us to know that what happens will be right for that tournament.
So what grass did you end up going with? And was it pure or did you oversow?
Some of them would be oversowed with ryegrass, but the base for the warm season grass we were looking at was a paspalum, a seashore paspalum. And that's because if we think about that particular environment, fresh water is at a premium.
Yeah.
A lot of water coming out for potable water quality is desalinated water. So it's very expensive, very, very sort of to produce energy resource that goes into it.
Yeah.
So what we wanted was a grass that could go into those environments, play authentically, but also tolerate a wide range of water conditions. And that's what paspalum is designed to do. And in that desert climate, with things being a little drier, because you're not just maintaining this for one pit, for one game, or for even one tournament. You've got to build these pitches. They've got to be in situ for a period of time. You've got to have warm-up events on them. You're going to have test events on them. And it's managing that paspalum, which we know can get disease. But in that dry desert climate, that really helped. And for me, when I look at the grasses that we were looking at, predominantly either Bermuda grass or paspalum, with or without overseeding of perennial ryegrass, that paspalum is the closest I can get to with the ryegrass in terms of the texture and the feel.
Yeah.
And given all those factors, paspalum was a no-brainer for at least the base of the pitch from a warm season grass and a summer growing point of view.
Because people listening to this mightn't have heard a lot about paspalum because we don't grow it. Oh, there's a little bit seashore CL paspalum in Australia, but is that something you've used anywhere else before?
We've used it in some parts of the world, typically where we find we've been using it in the Middle East a lot.
Yeah.
And often that's because of the water quality issue.
Is that the main reason?
It's one of the main reasons that we're using it is because of the water quality. If we're pulling water from aquifers or using treated sewage effluent water, that can have quite a lot of salinity.
Because despite its issues, and there are a number of issues, that's why it's not produced commercially in Australia, it's a beautiful looking grass.
Oh, it is. It's beautiful. It feels beautiful. It plays really authentically as a football pitch, and it performs at all different heights of cut. Mm-hmm. So, which is why we've used it more in those moments. Obviously, if you come over here to Australia, I mean, this is my first trip to Australia, and I've now fallen in love with Zoysia.
Yeah.
I'm now all about the Zoysia grasses, and I'm just thinking about ways that we can use them in different ways. Bermuda grasses are great as well, but there's just something that calls out to me about a Zoysia grass. But then that's me being a geek.
It shares some similar qualities to Paspalum, though.
It does. I could see that. I could see that in how the plant sits there, the canopy structured. And for me, that translates directly into the playing and how the ball and the player interacts. That's not to say the Bermuda isn't are not right. They absolutely are. And in many situations, it's the best grass for the purpose.
Yeah.
And that's why I have preferences. I like certain grasses, but for professionally for what we do, the mantra is the right grass for the right place.
Yeah.
And to do that, doesn't matter if it's a home lawn, you're building a local authority footy pitch, whether you're building an international stadium, you've got to look at those conditions you're growing the grass in and make sure you choose the one that's best adapted.
Yeah, absolutely.
And be flexible.
Yes. Yes. So self-confessed turf geek.
Yes.
Grass nerd, whatever you want to call it. How'd you get to this point? So it's quite a unique career. There's not many of you around the world, I'm going to suggest, and that's a compliment to what you do. It's not an insult. But where'd you start? What was your journey? Because it'd be quite an interesting one, I'd imagine.
Accident, as with most things in my career, complete accident. So I'm a soil scientist by training. I like digging holes. So I'm very happy with a shovel, getting my hands dirty, playing with mud pies. It's brilliant. And I really, that's what I spent most of my sort of early career at university doing, that kind of topic. And then I just saw a job advert one day. We're looking for a soil physicist to join the Sports Turf Research Institute. And that sounds a bit odd. What's that all about? So I came for an interview and I got the job and I've not looked back since. So predominantly I started my career in turf, focusing on the physics and the chemistry of the growing medium. Mm. Dealing a lot with the playability of surfaces and how that relates to the physical characteristics of what we're growing in. But as you're going through that, you have to get to know, and I've got to love, the green stuff that grows on top. And that whole ecosystem that we engineer and create, which is a turf surface. And so it was completely by accident that I ended up coming into the turf industry. And now, for me, it's so rewarding because unlike soil science, where I'd be digging holes all day.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a brown bit of soil. Yeah. There's a different brown bit of soil. Oh, there's a black soil. Interesting. Now I get to do all kinds of stuff. I've got to know about the biology of a grass plant, talking with plant breeders about morphology and physiology of grass plants. I've got to understand the nutrition of a plant. I've got to understand soil chemistry, soil microbiology, and how that interacts with nutrient availability and the grass plant itself with symbiotic relationships. Plant pathology. All of a sudden, you've got all these different things, and then you overlay that with, well, it's just not one surface. Mm. We're doing everything from any natural turf surface you can imagine, doing cool season, doing warm season, and all of a sudden, we start adding all these different potential options up, and no 2 days are ever the same.
So what's the split now between turf and soil work? I know they're one and the same thing, but is there more?
I would say these days we've got a lot of the soil stuff nailed, apart from the soil microbiology. That still is a big brown box.
Yeah.
And we don't know as much about that as we should do.
Yeah.
But most of my time these days is spent looking at grass and the turf surface that we're producing and often why it's not working.
Yes.
And for that, we often need to go and look at the foundation of what we've got underneath our feet, and that is what's going on underground. Unless there's something obvious, like a whacking great big tree causing shade or sucking the moisture out.
Yeah.
But and that's another part of what I love about the job, which is, and I talk about this to the students that I teach that come to me for every year when we sort of do training courses, is I like being a Sherlock Holmes of turf. So I don't have to have the deer hunter hat and the pipe, but I love where we have a whodunit. There's a patch of dead grass.
Yeah. Right,
let's go backtrack and figure out all the things we've got into. Why has that grass died?
And how long have you been doing this? How long have you been at SGRI for?
So that's a good question. Oh, crikey Riley. 18 years when
18
I had
years.
It. 18
wow.
years. Yeah. And that's zip bly. So, 18 years. And I spent the vast majority of my career as a researcher primarily, getting more involved in agronomy and consultancy. And now my role is pretty much all-encompassing science, research, supporting the science and research SCRI does, providing science and research support at the highest level to whoever it is within the company that needs it. Business development, agronomy, all of that stuff, design, because the more you get to understand it, the more you can pull together the big picture of what we're doing, why we're doing, how we actually go about doing it. And for me, the turf industry, whilst very niche, a little bit geeky, for me, offers so much variety in a day-to-day job that I can't imagine myself doing anything differently.
Yes.
Now, my wife says it makes going for a walk an absolute nightmare because instead of looking at the beautiful scenery, I'm just looking down at the ground going, oh, look at that weed. Oh, have you seen that bit of grass? Oh, look at that bug there. But I'm sure no matter what science I did, I'd end up doing that anyway.
To give everyone a little bit of context, I've been with Christian for the last couple of days and we're up on the Gold Coast and we traveled down to Teevan Valley Golf Club and we're there with some of the biggest turf production people in the world and Christian being the only scientist there, it was really hot. We walked back up the hill, we're in the clubhouse, everyone was enjoying a nice cold drink and we couldn't find Christian anywhere. We looked far down into the distance and he's on all fours. I thought he was sniffing the grass. I don't know what he was doing, but he slowly crawled his way back to the clubhouse inspecting every blade between here and there. So that gives you guys a little bit of an idea about about what he's like. But you're here in Australia. You've been here for a little while now. You are a part of the Lawn Solutions Australia conference where you were one of our guest speakers, where you did a great job. What else has the trip entailed for you? What else have you been involved in while you've been over here?
So whilst over here, it's a great opportunity for me, my first trip to Australia, and what a beautiful country. I love it here. I could see why a lot of people want to come here. But for me, it was about meeting some of my colleagues who a face is on a Teams call. So I'm getting to meet some of my colleagues face to face, and I'm a firm believer in human physical contact face to face, and you can solve all kinds of problems when you're sat in the room together. But for me, it was advancing my understanding of warm season grasses. I can very much assure you that in Bingley, in Yorkshire, in England, warm season grasses are not to be found. It's either a version of cold and wet, warm and wet. And when I say warm and wet, I mean probably your cold winter wet.
Yeah.
So for me, it's building my understanding of the warm season grasses as well. The Teevan Valley is exactly, for me, grass is a tactile thing. A playing surface is a tactile thing. You touch it, we touch it, a ball touches it. And you can tell a lot from that grass and that surface just by, and I probably was actually sniffing it because I was just
suspect.
because I was just looking to see if there was a little bit of anaerobicity in the soil. Again, I'm a bit of a geek.
Too many syllables. Yeah.
Absolutely. So for me, it's very much touching a feeling. You can get all the book learning you want, but actually coming and do it. Talking to guys like you and the turf producers about their practical experiences. I like going to turf farms. I've been to plenty of turf farms in my time, all cool season. And for me, that fascination is taking something that I study on a small little micro scale, and you guys are doing it, and the turf producers on a massive scale, on a farm scale. So whilst I've got my hoe and my spade, you guys have got tractors and all the gizmos, all the kit. I'm so envious about how to produce that. And so for me, it's been building my knowledge about the Australian market and turf and what are the challenges you guys have got. And so just traveling around from Brisbane to the Gold Coast to Sydney, and then latterly going to be going to Melbourne, starting off in the warm, going to the cool.
It's not
going to
be as nice as this when you get down.
Absolutely. Yeah. But heck, I'm from Yorkshire.
Feel like home.
It'll be just like home. For me, it's seeing those different climates, seeing those different environments, looking at what are the challenges. One of the things that I was talking about at the conference that you know was about what can we expect in the next 10 years? And for me, we've got some pretty big challenges as a species on this planet, looking at things like climate change. We're all feeling the issues of a globalized economy, shortages, resource availability. There are some big drivers for change. So for me, it's a moment of taking stock, seeing where we are. What are those challenges going to potentially bring for us? And what do we need to do now to prepare ourselves to make ourselves future ready?
Yeah.
And coming to Australia to see that from a warm season environment, but also just from that Australian market point of view, where there is such a lot of variation. Queensland's different to New South Wales, different to Victoria, different to Western Australia. Mm-hmm. So it's for us to understand what are those challenges and what's that going to look like in these different areas?
Sure.
And what can sport, what can turf
yeah.
do to help?
It's a big job, important job.
A really important job.
Just so people know the connection here, STRI have done and continue to do a lot of Lawn Solutions Australia's research work. So, for example, we'll get a new cultivar like Tiff Tough and we'll want to test Tiff Tough against other couch grasses that are currently on the market. So STRI at their Brisbane research facility will run those trials for us. You can check them out on our website with a quick Google search. So it's really important work for a number of different reasons, for the commercial world, for the retail world, for everything. So it's quite a skill. And you can tell that you're well versed to carry out that skill. Now, on your journey to Australia, I've asked all of our international guests, what's been as expected and what's surprised you a little bit?
I think sort of the climate, the sort of the way of life has expected me coming over here to Australia.
None of us actually do anything.
But I really, what surprised me is just how it's nice and laid back, but everyone's still got a job to do. We get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way, especially I'm a small town guy. I'm a country boy. I'm happy on a farm with a spade, walking around the countryside. So for me, going into small town Australia, going into some of the sort of the suburb areas, looking at just the differences in housing, for example, it's not too overpacked. It's kind of, and I look at what we're doing in the UK and it's pretty much, well, there's 60 odd million of us on a very small place. We're pretty much like sardines. Yeah. So for me, that was quite unexpected, seeing how that all works out. But look, it's met and exceeded my expectations coming here. And it's certainly a place that if I can persuade the powers to be to get me back here as soon as possible, because it's great and it's a great place to be.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of challenges, a lot of opportunities here in the turf world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saw a fair chunk of that this week being at the Lawn Solutions Australia conference where we've got 260 turf farmers in a room and you presented to them. What do you make of the Aussie turf farmer? You've been to a number of their farms now. Is it similar to what they are in the
UK? Oh, yeah, very much so. Look, farmers worldwide, I think of farmers worldwide, they're never happy. There's always something that's going wrong. There's always something that could be better, whether it's the weather, whether it's the crop. But they're a great breed of people because they're hardy, they're hardworking, their commitment, their dedication is amazing. And just seeing them and the quality of product they produce on that massive sort of multi sort of hectare, sort of hundreds of acres of space is amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It is incredible. It never seems to blow me away. But just dawn till dusk and later, there's always go, go, go. There's no such thing as a day off. You're always having to do something, whether it's irrigating, whether it's preparing the land, getting things sprigged or whatever we're going to do, there's always plenty of jobs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a tough breed. I tend to find the people in Yorkshire, we call a spade, and a turf farmer is absolutely a spade a spade kind of guy. And you chat to them and you get a really honest conversation. Mm-hmm. For me, that's invaluable because that's how we understand what are the challenges, what are the opportunities we need to be looking for the future.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it here. It was great having you here.
Thank you very much. It's been an amazing time.
Hopefully we'll get you back one time in the not too distant future. So next time everyone's watching Wimbledon or watching the FIFA World Cup, or they can see or understand a little bit more about what goes into producing a service.
Absolutely.
Like
it's not just grass. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, and we can say you're the face of it. Is that right?
Well, I'm never going to be the face of anything. This face has never sold anything
just
in its life.
Just picture Dr. Christian's head next time you're watching Wimbledon, and it's the reason it exists. But no, thanks for being here. Thanks for jumping on the podcast. Very interesting story, and I'm sure people are going to love hearing about it.
Thanks for the invite, Joe. Really appreciate it. It's been great to talk to you.
Cheers. Thanks.
Cheers.